The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 28th of August, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Paul Welsh, President and CEO of STX Energy. STX's ticker there, and Paul discusses their financial and operating results for the 3 and 6 months ended June the 30th. Also on the podcast, Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ, and Lawrence gives an update on their zinc, lead, silver project in Spain. Plus, I have Paul Griffiths, Chief Executive Officer of Predator Oil and Gas, PRD, and Paul goes over some of the highlights from their interim results. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Prairie Mining, that's PDZ, Starfine, STAF, Europa Metals, EUZ, and IMC Exploration, which is IMCP. Plus, I have the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 5 most liked RNSs too.
Want to know which companies are about to list on the London Stock Exchange? To see an up-to-date list of all the new and upcoming London IPOs, please visit voxmarkets.co.uk/IPO-watch.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Welsh, President and CEO for STX Energy. That's STX ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, you've had your results out, and these are, of course, a quarter and half year to the 30th of June, and we'll go into some of the highlights of that and some operating highlights in a bit. Before we do, Paul, if someone's just tuned in, new to investing, not familiar with the company, how would you summarise STX Energy for them?
Okay, thanks, Justin. Yeah, we're a high-growth company that's focused on the E&P sector in North Africa. So we have assets in both Egypt and in Morocco. We're producing across those assets at the moment working interest barrels, about 5,800, with 1,000 coming from Morocco and the remainder coming from Egypt. We've had a lot of growth lately, and we're listed on both the AIM exchange here in London and the TSX in Canada.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at your output here on the RNS and some impressive growth in the figures. And in fact, Paul, take us through some of the highlights, if you would, from the results.
So I think the highlights here, let's start with the financials. I mean, again, for the half year ending now, at June 30th, our netback increased to $19.3 million, up from $13 million, which is fantastic. That's a combination of improved prices along with increased production. Our operating cash flow is $20.3 million. And I think most importantly, we have $25 million in cash, 25.2, and that's down only 0.6 from the start of the year. Through this period, we've drilled 23 wells. So, we've managed to live basically within our cash flow to execute a pretty extensive capital program. So we drilled 23 wells, of which 20 were successful. And again, our cash position has kind of barely moved. So, we're pretty happy about that. In addition to that, just to ensure we have some flexibility, we also entered into a facility with the EBRD in Morocco to allow us to grow that business. They've given us a $10 million facility. So that is primarily focused on extending the infrastructure there. So when we're going to connect new customers, we have some capital to spend on that rather than the capital that we typically use to put into the ground to drill wells. So we've got additional flexibility over and above the $25 million in cash currently sitting on the balance sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, a big chunk of cash, you've been doing a lot, so it proves a lot. And do you know what? I mean, if you put on a percentage column there, I think that would show people really how impressive this growth is, because I've been sort of working it in my head, but it is really impressive. So operationally, it's gone very well as well. Take us just through the highlights.
Yes, sir.
And what's next, Paul?
Right. So operationally, if we just kind of run through the fields, in South Dussouk, we had a number of discoveries. The 3X and the 4X wells, they tested the 3X at 16 million a day and the 4X about 40. So again, a lot of growth there. In Morocco, we finished the program. We found probably in excess of 15 to 20 BCF. So that was a very successful program. We were looking at something closer to 12. We drilled 9 wells, 7 worked, and we had 2 important exploration successes. So again, that bodes well for the future program. We've also signed up 3 new customers. in Morocco for our gas. So our average gas selling price went from $9 an MCF now up to $10.50. So we've signed up contracts with Peugeot, the car manufacturer. They've actually started to take some test gas to test their system. They have a new car manufacturing plant just outside Kenitra. So that's where the gas is being sold into. And we have customers, Cetaxim and Extralay, which are also local manufacturing businesses that are going to start taking gas in October. So, you know, we're headed down the path that we told everybody. We're going to, you know, take our gas production from 6 million cubic feet a day up to 8 to 10. We're getting there. We'll get there by the end of the year. We still need to add a few more customers. So that was good growth. I think the other important growth areas that we probably haven't had the ability to communicate to our shareholders are in our non-operated assets. So in Northwest Kemsa, we've drilled 3 wells. The production there is now, it has risen from 4,000 barrels a day up to 5,600. So we drilled the 25, 27, the Ayla 4 wells. They all came in kind of on prog. All the wells are producing. The Ayla 4 well came in at 1,000 barrels a day. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of growth there. And then in Meseta, we drilled the Rabal 4 and 5 wells. They came in, you know, kind of as expected. They produce between 5 and 1,500 barrels a day individually. And then we drilled 2 wells in Meseta. These are 2 lease line wells. We've essentially downspaced the area in Meseta from a 250-meter offset down to 100. We drilled 2 wells within that new zone, and both wells came in. The first well, MSD-16, came on production at 2,000 barrels a day and is currently producing about 1,600. And the second well, MSD-15, will be on at the end of September, and it has more pay than the MSD-16 well, so that should come on closer to 2,000 barrels a day. So if you look at the Meseta field itself, when we originally got involved with the field in October of 2015, it was producing plus or minus 3,000 barrels a day. Today, we're producing closer to 6. So, you know, we've seen a lot of growth there. And this is growth that's kind of under the radar, because when we talk about our successes as we move through the year, we typically talk about our operated successes, but our non-op business is going incredibly well. So that has allowed us to take our production, our entitlement production from 3,200 barrels a day at the time we reported. Now we're producing closer to 4,400 barrels a day. And if you look at a working interest barrel, it's 5,800. So again, we've seen a lot of growth in this portfolio. We still have one well to come on production. That's the MSD-16. So we'll see that further increase as we move towards the end of 2018. So again, it's a great story. We're really happy to put those results out today.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as targets concerned, are you still on track for hitting those targets?
Yes, so we're still on track for our targets. Again, our targets, as we discussed in the past, we entered the year producing 3,500 barrels a day of entitlement barrels. We intend to exit at 8,000. Again, that's a combination of what we've seen in our operated portfolio and the non-op. Again, the big driver here is going to be getting South of Souk on production. That development plan is moving forward. You know, we just got word that the pipe has shipped from the mill in China, so it's on a boat to Egypt, as we discussed. So again, our guidance is unchanged. That's an 8,000 barrel a day exit rate and an 8 to 10 million cubic feet per day production in Morocco. So unchanged.
Marvelous stuff. Paul, for someone listening who likes the sound of this and likes the results and the progress you're making but not following the story, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think firstly, we're delivering on our plans. You know, we told people we're going to grow the business, and I think we're delivering on that. 2, we have a very active program. That's shown up in the successful well results we've had. Again, we've drilled 23 wells, so we still have a couple more to go. And then 4, you know, we have the ability to grow our business because we're in excellent financial health. You know, we have no debt. We have $25 million in cash. We have another $10 million of flexibility through the EBRD facility. So, you know, we can handle any upturn or any downturn. And because we're operating onshore in a very low-cost environment, you know, our assets are highly accretive and highly cash generative at the current price point. So we believe we're in a very good position as we move forward towards the end of 2018.
Absolutely. Paul, good to chat to you. Hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals EUZ. Ticker. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. How are you doing, Justin?
Good, thanks. Yes. So, you know, a man to your word. Yeah, you did say there'd be a sort of update out before scoping studies coming out. And we'll get into the details of that in a bit. Before we do, Lawrence, for people obviously listening who are new to the podcast or not familiar with the company, can you summarise what Europa is all about, please?
Basically, we are a lead zinc silver company. We're focused on projects in Europe. Our flagship project is the Trial project in Spain, in the province of Castilla and León, which we're very happy to be there. And after a lot of work, an awful lot of historic work's been done on this project, we took a lot of that, new management team, new group, and we announced a JORC 2012 resource earlier in the year of 60 million tonnes at 6.9% zinc equivalent. And also we discovered the presence of silver. So we've now got 30 million ounces of contained silver in our project as well. But that's just the beginning. We've got a series of work programs at the moment. One is drilling, which we've mobilized today. One is continuing to sweat value and understanding from all that historic coal, which was stored at the National Lithotheca down in Andalusia. And the third part is a scoping study, including doing some metallurgical work and understanding what our eventual product might actually be.
Yeah, well, you've announced the first of all. In fact, I go through the RNS as in order of headlines here. So you've just posted some pictures on Vox as well as of the drill rig starting to work out there, starting to do some drilling. So how long will this take? What are you doing exactly? And what are you hoping here, Lawrence?
So, well, I think there's distinct stages to the drill program. So, I mean, if you look at any of our block models, you'll see that the majority of the JORC resource, and you can see the pink high grade in there, it sits, if you like, to the left, the west of the license. Now, what we want to do is we just want to stick in a couple of holes quite far out to the east, reasonably far out to the east, just to identify the continuation of that mineralization. So you're not talking about adding a new resource or adding a huge amount of tons. But what you're doing is essentially you're saying you can see what the block model looks like here, and we've also intersected mineralization here. And that allows us conversations with people to say, look, it's obviously part of a bigger system, which it is, because, I mean, over to the west of us, you have the old Antonina mine, which successfully produce metals for a long time. So that's the first part. And then it's hauling the drill rigs back in after we've done that, having a further look around the outsides of the JORC resource, and then eventually going into the JORC resource, so infill drilling and potentially some other avenues we can explore, such as geotech and met holes, which will allow us to, if the results come back correct, upgrade our resources and also look at the metallurgical properties, i.e. start designing how a mine could be built, and further work on what the concentrate product is. So can you easily get the zinc out? Can you easily separate it from the rock and also separate the silver and the lead? Put very bluntly.
yeah, exactly. And so you sound quite confident that the mineralized structure there will be in evidence, in present out on the east, far east. Is that right?
We believe so. So that's why we're going to put a couple of holes in. But we'll have to wait for results. So I'm not going to over egg it. So that's going to be our first bit of work. And that's where you see the pictures from that we've posted up on Vox. That's where that's located.
Yeah, okay. And how long will this drilling take then, Lawrence?
Drilling? Well, I think we should make rapid progress, but we'll definitely expect to have results out by the end of the year. So it's a distinct series of drill holes. We think we can drill quite quickly. But so this is a combi rig, so it's an RC rig, which effectively is a bit sort of quick and dirty, if you like, because we're drilling relatively near surface. And then we can swap it out into a diamond rig as well if we need to go down deeper. So historically, all of the drilling that's been done on Terrell has been diamond. But this way of drilling, certainly Miles is very familiar with from Australia. It's used a lot in Australia with combination rigs. And we track down this combi rig to do things, hopefully, quickly and cost effectively. But it's the first time this rig's been mobilized to site. Our target is to have drilling results out easily by the end of the year. We'll be reporting constant updates as we go.
Yeah, so you'll have the scrimming study before that, though, won't you? So that you'll, yeah. So that'll be. I mean, you did say it's still on schedule. Now you said you by October. Is that right? So I assume late September.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. Yeah, that's correct. We're on schedule for that. We're working on it every single week. Mm-hmm. Whole team of people badgering away on that. It's been a really interesting process, actually. You know, it really demonstrates actually taking the time to have the right people around you and in the group. So, you know, Miles hasn't just said, right, go off and do a scoping study and come back with your findings. It's been a collaborative project. You know, Colin, who's an experienced mining engineer, has had lots of input. It's been everybody working together to say, yeah, but what about this or this or this? And we talked to the AMS at least once a week on a big call, and then the separate work parties talked to them independently. I mean, it's a really heartening piece of work, actually. It's an interesting piece of work, and I'm looking forward to putting out the results, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go into the re-logging of historical drill core. So I know you've got, last time in the podcast, you were quite enthused by what you found here. That's finished now, is it?
Yes, that's right. So it was an intense but safely overseen piece of work. So the National Glyptoteca was fantastic, and I took the time to say thank you to them and the RNS. So essentially, all the historic core from Terrell, most of it, was stored in a separate location in the south of Spain in the National Glyptoteca. So people have heard these podcasts before, I know, have probably heard this story, but just go over it. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things we did as a new sort of management team last year was to say, right, let's go and look at it. And we went to look at it, and we weren't sure what we were going to find. And you've just got these, you know, meters and meters and meters of beautifully stored core. And the more, and so that formed the basis of the drill report. And for instance, previously everybody had just been looking at the spreadsheets and look at the databases. But when you actually went back into the rock or went into the logs, we discovered silver. So just as a very straightforward demonstration of the joy of going back to first principles, we discovered all of that silver and got to build it into the resource. But there was a lot more that needed to be doing that. So we weren't sure about the specific gravity readings that we used in the drill resource. So we've gone back and done them, and we're having a look at those in comparison to the previous ones with AMS. But also, and I think this is really important, we got a huge amount of data from logging the rock, not just the intersections, so not just the mineralized areas. So looking at the slakes and having a look all the way along, the drill core, and systematically logging those. So we actually begin to understand, and I say I, but certainly the geological team have certainly been given a huge amount of understanding about the structures and what drives this system. And that's fascinating. We're looking at that, and we're getting a lot of understanding from that. And we hope to be updating the market when appropriate once we understand fully what we think we're looking at.
And when you say understanding, you're saying this is I assume you've taken on a more positive outlook after going through these in detail. Is that the case or what?
Absolutely. That's completely the case. But until we actually systematically go through everything and review everything and also use some independent consultants basically to look at stuff and say yes or no, actually, you're wrong, you got it wrong. We're not going to announce anything to the market, but that's the process we're going down. Mm-hmm. And as well as announcements, just understanding what it is, Justin. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really important. That's giving us lots of things to think about in a really positive way. But just hold your fire, and when appropriate, if appropriate, we'll update you on that work.
I understand. So it's the drilling going on. How much of that, I don't know how you, will state this in percentage or what, so how much of that is going into the work for the scoping study and how much it will be, you know, used for later on sort of announcements?
In terms of the scoping study, to use a scientific term, not a lot. So the scoping study has a lot of data already that it can work on. Remember that the scoping study is the variable limit. So it's you know, a percentage of error. So the scoping study's looking at obviously the historic data, the resource, but it's looking at a whole swathe of other things that need to be looked at independently, such as operations in the local area, infrastructure in the open area, potential mining design, other mines and how they mine, and mining techniques that could be potentially applied to Terral, and having a look at smelters and having a look at what the metallurgy might be separated. So it's going through the sort of strengths and weaknesses, if you like, but it's going through all the elements at quite a high level, because it's not down to PFS or anywhere near feasibility, but it's having a quite a high level about all of the aspects that make a mine. The work you've got with the drilling, if you like, is the ongoing building the resource systematically, increasing our understanding of the geology, of the structures, etc. It is informing, if you like, the next bit of work. Mm-hmm. So what do we do next? How do we bring more value? And also just getting us what we need to continue discussions with groups out there for the long-term nature of the project.
Yeah. And but you seem quietly encouraged by, you know, what's happening here. Is that right?
Oh, very much so. Mm. You know, the information we're getting, we're very happy about, but it all needs to be verified before we can go further. The Spanish team's working extremely well together, and a big thank you to them. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, it's one thing getting one thing on one workflow, on time, on budget, okay? But I think it's a testament to the team that, you know, they've got the drill rig in when they've said, you know, we've got the relogging done when we've said, the scoping studies on track, on budget, you know, lots of our other things. You know, we've just, a stupid thing, Justin, but, you know, we've just secured a new office with a proper core shed where we're starting to put core. You know, that was secured something like 25% under budget from what we'd forecast. So it's just these things about how's the team going on the ground? Is the company working? Are we making the same mistakes that the old company has made? And the answer is no, we're not. Mm-hmm. You change people, you've got the right people are gelling. We're listening to each other. You know, there's people taking leadership and there's also people listening and you know, getting on with stuff. So, and, you know, I'm very pleased. And the reason I wanted to put the pictures out today, you know, you've got people with proper hard hats, proper high-vis. All of our safety work's been done. Safety is an absolute priority at Europa. So it's not just that people are sort of rushing to do things and get deadlines completed. I think that's very much the mark of an old mining industry. But it's the fact that we're safely and efficiently, in a communicative manner, reaching our marker points in a proper fashion with everything logged and documented.
Yeah. So this will probably be the last of, was it major announcement until scoping study, do you think?
I won't say that. You may well see some more announcements. Yeah. So just give us some time to have a look through the other work that we're doing. But we'll be updating you. But depending on how we feel about the work from the relogging, we may well do an update on that. And Yeah, all focus on Terral at the moment.
Marvellous. Well, last thing to do, Lawrence, if you know, for people listening who like the sound of the progress you're making there, and if they're not following the story, you know, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
I think we've got a really good resource. We've got a sizable resource, which I believe will grow. We've got good grades. We've got a silver project. It's in Spain, which is a strong EU destination, and in Castilla and León, which is very supportive of the mining sector. And since, in a sense, all things changed in the company in Q4 of last year, or Q3, I think we've hit every single one of our promises. I think we've delivered on every single one of our milestones. And things go wrong in mining and exploration, and I'm not saying we may not be delayed in the future, but you can see what we've committed to very clearly and what we've delivered. And we've worked efficiently as well. We're not just drilling an entire hill for the sake of it. We put out a joint resource, in fact, on without expending any further drilling expenditure. But now we're going to build on that.
Marvellous stuff. Lawrence, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
Fantastic. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Griffiths, Chief Executive Officer of Predator Oil & Gas. PRD is the ticker there. Paul, thanks for coming back on.
Good morning, Justin. Good to say that I'm here in Trinidad actually today, and it's 4 a.m. local time. So if the words are a bit slurred, you'll have to understand the reason why.
I appreciate you getting up at 4 a.m., unless you haven't got a bed. But I appreciate that, Paul. It's impressive. Cause obviously, we'll go into why you're in Trinidad in a bit for people not aware of the company. In fact, you are newly listed sort of thing in May. But so, Paul, you know, for people not aware of the story, explain. What is Predator Oil & Gas all about, please?
Well, we're focused on Trinidad and Ireland. In Trinidad, we're focused on using carbon dioxide for enhanced oil recovery. We aim to hit a target of 150,000 barrels a day additional incremental production in this particular area of the Trinidad in the field, in this energy field, which we've identified, which we've relayed to the market before through CO2 EOR. And then in Ireland, we're focused on really a gas strategy that fits in with the country's concerns about security of energy supply, which is very, very topical at this point in time.
Yeah, well, it's odd because I was just saying to you just then before we came on, I said in both countries politically, you know, momentum is there for you to enhance or progress your strategy because for obviously different reasons or very similar reasons. But we'll go into that because, and you have a portfolio that's very interesting actually. Like I said, near term, obviously cash generation, and then you've got high impact in Ireland as well. So we'll go into that. So first and foremost, you're in Trinidad. How you know, is progress being made there? Are you going well? Is everything you know? Is it going to plan, Paul?
Well, it's going brilliantly to plan at present. We're actually, as I say, down here at present, it's dark outside, so not a lot happening. But we've just completed a successful series of meetings with the key players responsible for approving our operational plans for CO2 EOR. And I have to say it's been incredibly well received by those authorities. The potential for CO2 EOR is to unlock the new reserves in Trinidad in the mature onshore oil fields. And I think they now fully appreciate what we're trying to do. And the scope is there in their eyes for an eventual increase in the country's onshore oil production by as much as 30,000 barrels a day. And they recognize this as a real medium-term objective for the country. This also comes really at a very welcome time for Trinidad because it's contemplating right now the restructuring of Petrotrin, the state oil company. And this is key for the government. It's their priority in order to improve the economic and financial well-being of the country in terms of the onshore oil industry. So our CO2 EOR project is really going down a storm and valued as an important contributor to this process. So we've effectively swooped to establish this footprint in Trinidad that clearly differentiates us from the any other company operating here, because we're the only company focused on CO2 EOR. And most importantly, this puts us in a really, really strong position to be a successful pathfinder for CO2 EOR operations. So we won the hearts and minds here, and now the next stage is to accelerate as fast as possible, but as safely as possible, the CO2 EOR operational plans. But we're now securing the knowledge that we're going to get all the practical help we need from government regulatory authorities.
Wow. So that's I mean, like you said, you are a pioneer now. So I didn't realize you're a pioneer there in CO2 EOR.
My previous company was called Pathfinder when we went into Moroccan offshore and brought in Kosmos Energy. So this is natural for us to be a Pathfinder in CO2 EOR with a small P, not a capital P this time. Mm-hmm. But that was always the intention. We want to lead from the front. We don't want to be in the back.
Yeah. So you're saying that the country's behind this politically in regards to your project. But do you mean for other projects as well that you could be involved with?
Well, this is the prize, really. The key is that, you know, to have a successful CO2 EOR pilot, which clearly produces some cash flow, which is important, but more importantly, it demonstrates and unlocks the potential for all the other potential CO2 EOR projects in Trinidad, and as being the first company to prove it's successful in the course of time over the next few months, then, of course, that puts us in the forefront of acquiring additional assets and being the Trinidadian leader in CO2 EOR. And that's our objective. That's the way we can grow our business and add value through that, applying that expertise, which nobody has put together at this point in time other than ourselves.
Yeah. And am I correct in saying that, you know, Trinidad and the surrounding areas there have a lot of mature fields that could benefit from this kind of technology?
Well, that's the important point. I mean, Trinidad has been producing oil for 100 years from primary production, from water flood. So the next stage, as in America, United States, is applying CO2, what's called tertiary recovery. Mm. And that's the prize. You've got all these proven fields now in their very late mature stage. And they're all ripe for, not everyone will be suitable for CO2 EOR, but a large quantity of them is suitable for CO2 EOR, and that's the prize, and that's what, you know, we're at the head of the queue on.
Yeah, so
well, there is no queue. Yeah, we are the queue.
Yeah, you are the only people in the queue. That's good. Yeah, so
exactly.
So let's look at the time frame there. So when do you expect you to kick off with your program?
Well, the desktop planning has already started, and that's very important because, you know, I have to stress it's not all about just throwing the CO2 into the ground, getting some response and getting cash flow. It has to be planned very carefully before you do that to get the best possible result and to make sure you've got a 99% chance of success. So that part of it is very important. So that's kicked off. Already we've got positive results in the sense we might have underestimated a little bit our ability to produce a certain rate from these sands, so that's positive. But we've also started the planning for the facilities, and we've been down to look at the site to see how we can fit those facilities into the current site plan at the field. So within the next 3 or 4 months, we'll be expecting the first deliveries of CO2. But that's all conditional, having all the boxes ticked by all the relevant parties in government and in the regulatory authorities, because this has to be a safe operation. CO2 is a difficult gas to handle, so it's very important that we conduct operations safely. So shareholders have to be a little bit patient in terms of an absolute timeline, like today, tomorrow. Our priority is safe operations, because without safer operations, it doesn't prolong our involvement in Trinidad if we don't have a good safety record. So very important that we get the safety side and environmental side absolutely correct.
Yeah, but as far as like guidelines as in what you hope to produce, say you have put out sort of what you reckon 150,000 barrels of oil for the first year, first 12 months, obviously by Texaco. But Texaco said that figure, but that wasn't using CO2, was it?
Yeah, Texaco had planned a water flood project in this particular block, and they estimated about 150,000 barrels a day production in the first year. After fill up of the reservoir and shutting in the wells. But they never implemented the project. And there are reasons why they didn't implement the project. It was the only area of the field where they had a joint venture partnership with another party. And, of course, this is some, let me think, 45 years ago. So actually getting the understanding of why they didn't implement it is very difficult. But it appears to be a difference of opinion between the two partners, one of which had an additional asset close to this particular part of the field, which they didn't want compromised by water flood. So that what's quite amazing down here is that because it was so long ago, nobody had sort of picked up on this, and we were the only ones who initially had picked up on this, and now everybody's checking it out and wondering why it was never implemented.
Yeah, okay, well, that's Trinidad sounding very positive there. Let's move over to Ireland and offshore then Ireland. You've got two sort of prospects, very high impact, potentially unbelievable, you know, transformational if it's successful. So where are you at here? I know you say you've made a frontier exploration license application. What's the deal with this? I mean, what's the chances of you? I mean, how does it work? I mean, it sounds like you have it, but you have to apply for it. Is that the case? What's the deal?
No, it's called a successor authorization, so you have the right to apply for the next automatic right to apply for. The next form of license, and that form of license is a frontier exploration license. I am not going to sit here and predict, you know, whether it's going to be awarded or what day, because it's not in my gift. It's the minister's gift. Mm-hmm. All I would say that this is a very important strategic asset for Ireland, as I can explain, and therefore it's in nobody's interest not to award it, and certainly in nobody's interest not to award it in a relatively short time span. But you have to appreciate that the minister in Ireland has many issues to deal with at present, not least of which is Brexit and the looming October deadline. So, you know, we can't put our project at the forefront of government policy. You know, that's not our gift, and neither would we want to be pressurizing the minister or any other regulatory authority on that basis.
Yeah, it's probably worth going in,
in terms of you know, where we are in Ireland, we're in a very happy position. We're very comfortable with the progress, with what's going on. We're not content with just our Corrib South gas strategy, which, to be fair, is what we focused on with shareholders over the last couple of months. But we're now advancing our other gas asset, which is called Ramhead, in the Celtic Sea, which is adjacent to the Kinsale gas infrastructure. And this is Ireland's largest undeveloped gas discovery. It was made by Marathon in 1984. Our CPR gives us 2.7 TCF of gas in place. That's 100%. We have 50% of that. And that's a high estimate case. But to put it in context, that's approximately three times the size of the producing Corrib gas field. So naturally, you know, we're progressing that now and putting that on the fast track. We've just started some desktop studies that are in progress to effectively de-risk the potential recoverable reserves, but we're using the same technology, the management is using the same technology that we use to de-risk the highly successful Tendara gas project onshore Morocco before it was acquired by Sound Energy. So some of the issues that surrounded Tendara before Sound took it over are the same issues that surround this particular gas asset, and we believe we can comfortably de-risk those using the same technology. So I would say this is a very important development for the company, because obviously, you know, that's a large potential gas resource, which if we de-risk is not only three times the size of Corrib gas field, but three times the size of our Corrib South gas prospect. So it creates another arm or another bow to our string, to our company strategy, basically.
Yeah, and it's probably worth just touching on, you know, the reason why again, sort of political motivation will be behind this is because I was reading articles, you know, from the Irish Times and stuff like that, saying that the two major gas fields are maturing, aren't they? And a third of Ireland's supply will be coming offline. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean that. To put it in context, I mean, way back in 2016, I highlighted the issue of security gas supply in a newspaper article. and rather like poor old Nigel, it was perhaps laughed at the time, Nigel Farage, it was perhaps laughed at the time, but hell, nobody's laughing now. So the key issue was that in a few years' time, 73% of Irish gas will be imported through the UK interconnectors. And of course, there's a strong possibility, not a definitive possibility, but a strong possibility that UK will not be a member state of the European Union. So the issue of security of gas supply is now very much on the front burner because of these issues. And secondly, gas prices have increased by 60-65% from this time last year, which is now feeding through to consumer bills. So the development of indigenous gas is very important in the context of eventually moving to a renewable energy, green energy economy, but that cannot be done overnight. And I think that's a dawning realization that gas is that bridge to get to that, you know, favored position. But it cannot happen instantaneously.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, I don't like using an analogy, but it's a bit like a transition period in Brexit. You know, you can't just fall off a cliff edge and rely on renewable energy. There has to be a transition.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so looking at, you know, three sort of projects here now at the moment, I mean, you know, timeline-wise, I mean, what are you expecting news-wise? Which is first, do you think, what will happen?
I believe, you know, the news flow on the Trinidad CO2 EOR will be feeding through over the next 3 months in various stages as we tick the boxes and move towards the first deliveries of CO2 and injecting that. So that's a key driver for news flow. The second part is the award of the frontier exploration license, which just ticks the box in terms of moving the Corrib South project along. And then the third will be the announcement of an update in due course on the Ramhead studies, where we're focused on trying to determine potential deliverability and recoverable reserves from this big gas resource, which is currently in place estimate. So those are the three drivers, but they'll all be going along, you know, on a similar timescale. But in the background, there'll still be continuing news flow, not just on Ireland and security of gas supply and our potential contribution to that, but that'll be in the, you know, the public press. Secondly, in Trinidad, of course, Petrodin are undergoing a reorganisation at present, and that's very important. That'll be in the public eye, and our contribution, potential contribution of CO2 EOR is very important to that, and that'll keep us in the public eye in Trinidad, which will feed through into news flow in other press articles. So there's direct and indirect news flow all the time.
Yeah, and you have signed sort of confidentiality agreements as regards, you know, partners for your Irish prospects, haven't you?
Yes, we have, and you know, as soon as we get the FEL, we can start those negotiations and discussions in earnest. But there's no point in progressing them mm-hmm. right now. We progress them as far as we can until the box is ticked on the license, the legal box, basically. But that's all in hand, so nobody's going away. You know, everybody understands the process.
You got you. Okay, Paul, one final thing. If someone listening to this likes the sound of this but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Right. First thing is share price has strengthened by over 30% since the IPO, but there's still a long, long, long way to go, as you appreciate. It's a very strong portfolio with lots of materiality in Trinidad and Ireland. Secondly, news flow is backed by Predator being in the public eye, both in Trinidad and Ireland, where we are in the right place at the right time, at the forefront of in-country concerns in terms of in Ireland energy supply and in terms of Trinidad repositioning of the onshore energy-based economy and restructuring of Petrodin. And then thirdly, and in my view most importantly, management is highly experienced and savvy in growing giant oaks from little acorns, as our track record shows. And Predator intends to aggressively grow its business accordingly, and we have demonstrated in just 3 months since the IPO that strategy. And the last point I would make in that context is that Predator is not a retirement home for directors seeking to just take their salary without any commitment. So shareholders expect a 24/7 commitment and that's what they get. And that's shown by the fact that it's 4 a.m. or now 4:15 a.m. local time in Trinidad.
And that you own 44% of the stock yourself. So that's, you know, that underlines your confidence.
I do. Yeah. So obviously, you know, that's the reason why I maintain a high percentage, is because I'm looking for the giant oak, not the little acorn.
Marvellous stuff. Paul, good to chat to you. Thanks for getting up at this, well, ungodly hour, your time, and chatting to us. And hopefully we'll chat again.
No, it's a pleasure.
Well, hopefully we'll chat again in not too distant future at a more reasonable time.
We will.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm fine, just recovering. Well, not really recovering, but just glad to be back to work after a fairly dull and quiet weekend, although it was relaxing, I have to say. But what with the rain on Sunday and everything else, it wasn't much of a bank holiday weekend. And the MotoGP at Silverstone got washed out.
Did it?
Yes. First time, I think it's the first time in living memory it's been cancelled due to rain, which is unbelievable. But ain't safe to ride motorcycles when you got that amount of water on the track.
No, that was crazy. We are having extreme weather this year, aren't we? From a financial point of view, I saw that apparently prices of meat and veg and all that got up by 5%, which is about £7 a month due to the extreme of the beast from the east and now hot weather. And so I saw this guy standing in a field of wheat on the BBC News, and it should have been up to his waist, he said, this time of year, but it's now just below my knee. So that's the issue. But I don't know whether it plays into the old, you know, climate change and warming, you know, greenhouse gases and all that stuff, and in general, or whether it's just one of those freak years, you know.
The crazy thing is, you can look back in history at major events. I mean, D-Day, for instance, in June, it was D-Day was cancelled, or the first D-Day was cancelled because of the poor weather. So I mean, and then once they'd actually landed, obviously, you know, there's a massive historic event, but once the soldiers were working their way through France against the Germans, they were suffering dreadful weather conditions and all the rest of it. So, you know, nothing's changed, really. Yeah. We've always had dreadful summers and good summers. You know, it's just the way it goes. But I think being Brits, we're on an island, so we probably get greater extremes than others. And obviously, one of our favourite pastimes is talking or moaning about the weather.
Yeah, I just wonder if the trend is changing though, because I mean, I've been watching around the world, you see sort of horrific sort of like in India and floods there, so it's worse than 100 years, and you think, well, that's an exception, definitely. But anyway,
yeah.
Well, let's talk about you know, stocks rather than weather. What are you looking at, Al?
All right, just got four stocks to look at today. I want to talk about Prairie Mining. PDZ is the epic code, first of all. Just to recap for listeners, Prairie has two huge coal assets, coking coal assets in Poland. It's got the Jankarski mine, which is rated to be the highest quality coking coal mine in the Northern Hemisphere. And the coal that mine will produce will sell at a premium to other coking coal. And also the Debiensko project too. The Debiensko mine, which is another coking coal mine. All of these are served by exceptionally good infrastructure in terms of rail transport, everything else. And there's the incumbent government in Poland are looking to regenerate and reactivate the domestic coal industry. Between the two projects, there's a net present value of something like 3.3 billion euros in coking coal, which, you know, coking coal sells for about $200 a ton. So there's an awful lot there. And the stock was making an awful lot of headway last year and early on this year, but then there was an issue with the environmental department regarding the applications that had been made. You could probably summarize it best as an administrative error on the part of the Polish government, and Prairie Mining said, well, look, you know, this is crazy, we will take legal action if this isn't settled. And so that's progressing. In the meantime, the state mining company in Poland, which is JSW, incredibly complex name, I won't even try to pronounce it, has said that it is in discussions with Prairie regarding the potential purchase or a joint venture on its mining assets. And indeed, today, Prairie Mining published an RNS this morning, which said that discussions continue. And this is based on an article that appeared on the Polish Polish newswire Pat Business yesterday, which says Listen Coking Gold Miner is working on the asset valuation of Prairie and expects to announce further decisions on this in mid-December. And the chief executive of JSW, Daniel Ozon, told reporters the legal order is being finalised, and together with advisors, we are working on asset valuation, which obviously is a pretty positive statement to make. And naturally, you'd expect Prairie to be cautious in the RNS, which they have been today. But as we've seen this morning, the share price has jumped up, jumped back up to 31.32 pence, which is where it was before all this started. And just to take you back to the initial research note, which was published last year by Align Research. Align cited a £1.18 pence price target based on the the environment, based on the demand for coal, and also the fact that there is a joint venture is set up ready to go with China Coal and with CD Capital, who are a Chinese investment group, and all of the ducks are in place, if you like, for Prairie. But clearly, the state mining company has the infrastructure and has the reach to regenerate and help regenerate and reactivate the mines, and that's now the expected route that, that this will go down. But either way, currently shares are, say, 31.32p, market cap of 52 million there or thereabouts, been as high as 45p on the year, as low as 20, in fact, no, over 50p on the year, and as low as 21p, but there is, I think, I think the size of those assets, I think we could, it's reasonable to expect that if a deal is done next month, that it will be at quite a premium to where we are now.
Well, you know, that's speculative, isn't it?
It's highly speculative, and shares can go down as well as up, and I'm not making a recommendation. I'm just merely commenting and making observations on events that have taken place, newswire announcement yesterday, and an RNS to respond to that from Prairie today.
More stuff. They are down from that 52 pence they hit, and then they're down to, what, 31 at the moment? So, but it looks like they spiked up today, didn't they?
They did. That's up from 25, 26 pence, where they've been sort of, they've been trading around that level for the past few months. And obviously on the news today, the shares have jumped up again. So near term, I mean, here we are, end of August, nearly in September. So reasonable to assume that further statements will be sort of made in the coming weeks. And we wait with bated breath. I should declare at this point, I am also a shareholder in Prairie Mining. So
I see.
There we go.
Okay, well, it was controversial. Anything else? What else are we going to get?
Well, just this is a company that you've discussed at length. It's Europa Metals, of course, the former Ferrant Crescent Holdings, which has mining projects, lead and silver mining projects in northern Spain, in Toral in particular, which is, of course, Spain is a benign and positive environment for mining, and there are. There's basically an awful lot of money in the ground at these projects. The zinc asset is valued at around $2 billion. The lead asset at around $1 billion, with silver also topping that out. So also, if you like, similar numbers to the numbers we were talking about with Prairie, but instead of a market cap of $56 million, Europa Metals has a market cap of about $2.5 to $3 million, currently trading at just over a penny.
What market cap did you say?
Market cap of just under 3 million.
No, at the moment they are about 6 million. They are.
6 million. My apologies. Of course, yes. I'm looking at some data here, and I didn't take into account the additional issues from the recent fundraising. My apologies on that. So we have this we have these assets on the ground. We have a talented board developing the project and building the the project. And today, of course, the company announced that it had mobilized the rig, the combination rig, which is due on site shortly. And the company had also relogged the historical drill core data. And of course, it's relogging. Mining techniques are ever developing, ever improving, ever the accuracy is improving all the time. So, of course, any relogging like this is affirmation of the existing data. And of course, that is the case with each historic drill hole that the company has examined to date. Also, very important, I think, for investors, the company said this morning that Lawrence Reed, the director, this morning said that the key work streams had been completed on schedule and remain within budget. And that's very important, I think. You know, you don't want to, at this early exploration stage, you don't want to hear that the company is running over budget. So an experienced board running the projects within budget is very encouraging. And indeed, we look forward to when that rig arrives on site and we get the first assay samples to analyze.
Yes, it's odd. I was saying it, you know, news and stuff, and people were expecting some update coming out, and so the share price rose, and then the news dropped, and so did the share price, which is very odd. I mean, it always happens. It's you know what? It's human condition that people look forward to things. People in their mind, your imagination is a lot better than reality. That's what it's about. Yep. And so you construct every kind of thing, what's going to happen with the release, and people start buying like crazy. And the news comes out, and it's what we thought it would be. But, you know, the imagination, the expectation of news is always greater than the reality. And so
it is. There's an old saying in the markets. Old saying in the markets is always better to travel than to arrive. And yeah. I think, you know, with when companies are at this juncture, that's often the case. So, but yeah, you know, Europa is an incredibly exciting project. And I think we discussed this in the past, that peer group projects have been valued sort of between twice the current valuation for Europa and up to 90 times the value. So as this project progresses, as data comes back confirming the resource that's there and also moving towards actually developing to the next stage of becoming a mining production company, then I think we'll see some a rapid transition in the share price. But clearly, that's my opinion. That's not fact. And I will also say here at this juncture, I am a shareholder in Europa Metals. So there we have it.
I'm a holder as well. I do believe, you know, at 6 million, when you've got the possibility of generating, you know, a couple of hundred million from a mine, is undervalued. And you look at peers as well, and that's why I'm in it. But you always get traders in and out of share prices like this, which is slightly annoying, but that's the way it is. But, you know, don't. I'm not a trader. I mean, I'm an investor, and I look for the greater value generation over sort of months to years, rather than trying to get 10, 20% in the short term. What's the point of that? Why go for 10, 20% when you can get anything from 100 to several 100%, you know, if just by being patient, that's all, you know. But there we go. Anything else, Al?
Yep. A change of subject now. I'm looking at a company called Starfline. The epicode is STAF. Starfline established in 1986, and they're the UK's market leading recruitment and training company. It's got its recruitment division and People Plus and recruitment supplies flexible blue collar workers, over 60,000 staff a day to 1,500 private sector clients across the UK. It also operates in Poland as well as the UK, but it's centred in the UK. And People Plus is an adult skills and training provider. This company's delivered a pretty impressive performance over its years. The past sales revenues over the past 10 years have increased at a compound annual growth rate of 25%, which by any standards is pretty impressive. But along the way, of course, there have been ups and downs and peaks and troughs. My colleague, Dr. David Paul of VectorVest, picked this stock out last week, and I think with good reason. The company announced interim results on July 25th. Revenues grew 12% to 481 million. Underlying pre-tax fell fell due to digital investment into the digital arm of the company and the acquisition of Learn Direct apprenticeships for People Plus. The company is has just commenced a 5-year plan to increase underlying diluted earnings per share to £2. EPS currently sits at 47p, so the company's got a way to go yet. But it pays a dividend, and the interim dividend grew by 3% on the year. From a charting standpoint, the stock has traded with a consolidation pattern and is on the verge of what looks to be a breakout. And indeed, the shares have delivered a sharp increase in value. In value since early June this year, in the run up to those results, the Vectorvest has a series of financial metrics which, if a stock is on the way up, that it can be triggered. The relative timing metric for staff is currently logging at 146, and this in fact this metric first flagged up to members in early June this year. Members of Vectorvest would have been able to get into the stock if that was on their list of criteria to buy. Shares are currently trading at just over £12. The initial target for staff for Vectorvest is just under £16, 1575p. But from a technical standpoint, if this breakout occurs over the next few months, then there's a technical target there of well over £20. So, given the track record of Staffline over the past 10 years, in the way it's grown, its sales revenues, and the company's 5-year target to bring EPS up to £2, I think you've got all the fundamental elements in place, and also backed by a very strong charting position to take you forward. And obviously, if you invest into this company at this stage, then you'll be earning a dividend on route too. So perhaps not the most exciting sector in the world to invest into, but nonetheless, it's all about growth companies, and Staffline right now looks to be on the verge of major growth.
Yeah, well, if you know, Vectorvest highlighted this in June. That was the sweet spot there. Right? Wow, yep. It was an amazing call because I put no credence in technical forecasts whatsoever. I just see it as, you know, Fugazi as fairy dust, all those Fibonacci's and all that rubbish. I understand. I like price action charts, you know, but what's happened to me is more important. So moving averages are like previous support levels, resistance levels. That to me has happened. It's fact. Saying what's going to happen. That's telling the future. If we can all, if anyone can do that, they wouldn't be in the game of telling the future. They'd just be doing it themselves. And it's funny. People teach the forecasting of Fibonacci and all this. But hang on, if you can do Fibonacci, if you can forecast future share prices, you wouldn't be teaching it. You'd just be owning, you know, a continent somewhere and enjoying the riches. You know, I just think
I am totally in agreement there, and the reason that I like Vectorvest is because it uses the fundamental data in conjunction with technical. So technical is just a part of it. So where you've got a strong fundamental picture, where you've got a strong track record for growth within the company, and then you've got a stated intention by the board and management to increase EPS to that level, and progress along that route on the fundamental standpoint, if that's also backed up by a strong charting position too, then I agree. Charting alone doesn't do it for me, you know. But I think if it's there's a strong indicator that things are going to move, and is supported by that too, then I think you've got a very good investment case. And that's really where Staffline is. But don't buy on technicals alone. I certainly wouldn't.
There's telling sign on the chart. I mean, obviously you pair it with fundamentals, but there was telling sign on the chart where they did a double bottom at 8.90, just below £9. And normally that always happens. You normally get a round figure, it tests the level of. That doesn't mean it's a solid support. It means that it's almost like a trampoline support. It'll hit it, bounce below it, then almost bounce back up. And it did that twice. So it did it in March. Did it again in June, where it bounced off that 890 level. And then there was two resistance points in between those two bottoms at £10, pretty much. When it broke up convincingly above sort of 10.30 there, that's a new range. And it also, yeah. also coincidentally, that's when it broke up by the 200-day moving average, which is always yeah. good because it's obviously a measure of price that's happened. It's a trend of what's happened. So it's, yeah, good technical level. Good well, stuff. Yeah, if you call in June, that was very good because that was almost the bottom there. It was very good.
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, imagine if you got in below £9, early June. I mean, you'd be dead chuffed by now.
You'd be laughing all the way to the bank, Al. Laughing.
You would, mate. You would, yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, anything else you're looking at, Al?
Yes, I just want to finally mention a company called IMC Exploration. IMCP is the EPIC code. Now this is IMC Exploration are an ex-exchange listed company, market cap of around 3.5 million. They have a number of assets in Ireland. They have the Avoca copper mine in Southeast Ireland. They have the North Wexford Gold Project and the Kilbricken Zinc Project in County Clare. The company announced earlier this year a joint venture with Trove Rehab Limited to rehabilitate the tailings from the Avoca mine, where there's already it's well established in research and tests in the area that there are significant concentrations of copper, zinc, lead, arsenic, and aluminium, and there is the North Wexford Gold Project. There have been a number of drill intercepts of quality gold, and likewise the zinc project in Tulloch, County Clare. The Kilbricken region there is one of the top 10 base metal deposits in Ireland. So high quality all around. Now, a bit of a check at history with IMC. The board up to May this year included Liam McGrattan and Neil Ring, both of whom stepped down at that point, and Eamon O'Brien and Catherine Byrne have stepped in into its place, Liam and Neil's places onto the board. There has been some research into this company. The sheer size of the assets that's owned by MC indicate multiples of the current share price, subject to funding going forward. The company had a funding for $250,000 a little earlier on this year. So the share price action since then has been interesting. It's popped up to just over 2p, then dropped back down, and it's currently trading. It moved back up last week and currently sitting at 1.65 pence. So no news yet, but again, this is an interesting project with some quality assets, well-recognized quality assets, and watch this space going forward.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks, Al, and we'll chat next week, fella.
Indeed. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, UK Oil and Gas, that's UKOG. At four, Petroneft Resources. That's a new one, this. I mean, in fact, I think Watermelon on Twitter did point those results out to me, so they've obviously been highly followed. At three, lost count there, Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At two, we had Paul on the podcast, Predator Oil and Gas. And at number one, it's Europa Metals. And of course, we had Lawrence on the podcast too. Okay. Time for the top five most liked RNSs are as follows. SDX Operations, of course, we had that one with Paul chatting earlier on, half year and operating results and 6 months and 3 months and all that stuff. Results, very good results there, good growth in the financials. Rehabil Resources at four, update on Rehabil California. At three, Europa Metals, rig mobilization and Toral project update. At two, Talao Energy, conference presentation. And number one, most liked RNS, came from EVR Holdings. Melody VR signs agreement with Sony ATV in Europe. And, STX was joint fifth with Predator Oil and Gas Holdings interim results. So that's Paul, who's obviously on the podcast as well. Okay, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.